Hello, everyone. Welcome to the session. Today, we will discuss the migration methodologies to migrate from Oracle to Microsoft SQL Server. Let me start off with introductions. I'm Shamik. I'm a program manager on the data migration team at Microsoft.
Hi, I'm Sriraman. I'm an engineering manager with the data migration team. Prior to this team, I had worked with multiple products in Microsoft, including Visual C++, C#, SQL, and currently working with Shamik on the data migration platform.
Great. So let me cover the agenda in brief. We'll briefly cover what motivates customer to go to 2016. You've heard that in many sessions over the last 3 days or so. We'll briefly touch upon that. And we'll discuss the migration methodology, which will include a few processes and tools that will help you migrate from Oracle to SQL Server. At the very end, we'll leave some time for questionnaires, so I would urge all of you to hold on to your questions to the very end, and we can answer all of those. Well, so before we go any further, let's start with a role play. My dearest friend Sriraman, who's a good colleague of mine, he's an IT business decision maker at this enterprise company. And one day he was told by his CIO, we've had these systems for a while. The business has organically grown. The applications have organically grown. Why don't you think about data platform modernization? So that task was given to him, and he had a bunch of questions.
Actually, I'm dealing with a problem that's probably fairly familiar to many of you. The business, as Shamik pointed out, has been growing pretty organically. The infrastructure cost has been growing. And with the increased demand for reduction of cost, there's more scrutiny on what we are spending cost on infrastructure for. There's more push for reducing the operational cost as well as the infrastructure cost. But along with that, there's also a demand from the business perspective to pull in data from heterogeneous sources, being able to manipulate data at a much higher speed and much more volume. So for this complex problem, when we first looked at it, and first thing we wanted to look at was what is the increasing cost of, why is there an increasing cost of operation? And the first line item that stood out from the budget was the licensing cost that we are paying for Oracle databases. We have quite a few of those, and over a period of time, we have actually added more and more features for us to be able to grow with the business. So that's my first question to my partner here is, how do I go about reducing that cost without sacrificing on the features that we have grown accustomed to having, the performance that we have grown accustomed to having?
Well, before you get into that question, let me iterate on a few points on why do customers want to migrate? Right? You spoke about reducing infrastructure cost. You spoke about reducing operation cost. One of the biggest advantages of going to 2016 is you can lower the total cost of ownership. Why would I say that? Well, let's take, for example, Oracle here. You have to pay for data guard. You have to pay for in-memory. You have to pay for compression. A typical one-core license, Oracle, including all of these features built in, would cost you $150,000. You can get SQL Server at a fraction of the cost.
That's very interesting to know. What about the, as I said, the one other aspect of it is we don't want to sacrifice on what we already have. We want to continue to have performance.
Okay.
How does SQL scale up in terms of performance?
I don't know if you, I don't know if all of you attended sessions by Bob Ward, where he did explain why SQL Server runs faster and how fast does it run today. So if you look at standard TPC age benchmarks, SQL Server has been rated as a leader when it comes to performance. So Oracle's, I think, at number 4.
Oh. So you mean to say that I will get a much better performance?
Of course.
At a lower cost?
Absolutely.
What about the security aspect of it?
Well, that's another interesting point. Do you know, for the last 6 years, the National Institute of Standards and Technology has rated SQL Server as the least vulnerable database?
That's good to know. That's good to know. We've been trying to patch and get the infrastructure ready for many of the security patches that come through.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, the conundrum that I'm facing, how do I set myself up to work with these multiple data sources, being able to still get the analytics out of that? And how do I get my infrastructure ready for the cloud?
So I think that's where the integration with the entire data platform ecosystem comes into play. Various SQL Server offerings come into play. To reduce your infrastructure and operational cost, you could go to Azure. We have a platform as a service offering. We have infrastructure as a service offering as well. Now, there is tight integration between all data platform technologies like Azure Stream Insight, Data Lake, Data Factory, Power BI. So they seamlessly integrate with SQL Server. So you can run your analytics, you can visualize your reports, you can do all of that at a fraction of the cost.
You definitely sold me on moving to SQL 2016. The next question I have, which I'm pretty sure many of the folks in this room will have, is how do I go about this? My footprint is pretty large. Mm-hmm. The project seems pretty huge. Is there a process to doing it?
Well, let's discuss the process in details. So think of the migration methodology as a software development lifecycle, right? So there are various stages to the migration methodology. You start off by defining the scope of the project. Then you spend some time trying to assess what your environment consists of, what kind of applications run on the environment, what kind of databases power those applications, so on and so forth. You build a solid blueprint to devise the migration steps, the architecture, so on and so forth. Then there's this little element of going into an iterative process where once you have a solid design, you migrate, you test, you remediate. You keep doing that over and over again until you have enough confidence. And then finally, when you're ready, you actually deploy. I have a question for you, though. Now that we're going to discuss these different stages, as the IT head, how do you define the picture of success for the migration?
That's a very good question. So I've been in conversation with multiple stakeholders. So I look at it from the perspective of the CIO, who's accountable for the migration. I look at it from the application owners, who would like to be consulted because there might be an impact to the application from the migration of the data. I also look at the partners who are going to be driving this migration and working with all of them. And we've come up with a fairly good scope of what we want to go after. As I said, the biggest push is for reducing the total cost of ownership,
mm-hmm.
is to be able to run the infrastructure at a lower cost. We want to drive towards that. We want to drive towards server consolidation. We have a picture of what the success looks like. And ultimately, we want to be able to drive the acceptance criteria towards having the minimum disruption on the application as well as our end users.
Great. But have you actually thought about external dependencies? You might have ISV applications that run in an environment. What kind of support will you get from the vendors who will help you with this migration?
Definitely, that's a very good question. I didn't think about that, and I should definitely talk to my ISV partners as well with regard to the migration.
Okay. So now that you've defined, what do you think should be the next steps?
Again, the definition part of it was fairly easy. But now that I look at the infrastructure footprint,
mm-hmm.
I kind of feel overwhelmed with the number of assets that I have. Is there a way that you can help me come up with an idea of the inventory of the database footprint that I have so that I don't miss any of the stuff that might be lying around.
Well, interesting you bring up this point. It's not just about the database footprint alone, right? You have applications, you have dependencies, you have hardware.
Exactly.
Licensing costs, so on and so forth. Well, the first part of assessment is unearthing the unknown. So you have to uncover everything in your network, in your farm, that you have no clue about.
That is definitely true, Shamik, actually. So the idea is for me to actually get a picture of what is on the network, mm-hmm. what are the applications, who are the dependencies, what do they use. Is there an easy way to do it?
Well, yes. Microsoft has this tool called the Microsoft Map Toolkit. Map Toolkit has a bunch of different workflows that you could use for discovery. For the purpose of this conversation, let's actually talk about database discovery, and I'll show you what the Map Toolkit looks like.
You want to go over to the next slide?
So if you notice on the screen, this toolkit is called the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit. It's got various different workflows. It's got a cloud workflow, a desktop workflow, a server workflow, a desktop virtualization workflow, usage tracking workflow, and so on and so forth. For the purpose of this, I'm going to actually use the database workflow. So in the interest of time, I actually ran a quick discovery on my local machine. You could, as an admin, you can do it across your network to find out what's spread across your network. On this machine, though, if you notice, it's actually discovered that I have a instance of SQL Server 2016 and an instance of Oracle 11. So using this, you could actually lay out the entire inventory of your environment.
That's fantastic. I can see that I can not only see the SQL Server instances, the versions, the Oracle instances and the version, as well as the infrastructure excuse me, that supports it. This is fantastic. Now that we've got this picture, however, I think we need to dig a little bit deeper for me to get an estimation of what the resourcing requirements are, how much is the effort that would take for me to migrate these DBs over. Is there a way for me to actually dig into each database and actually find out what it would take to migrate them?
So the question is actually very interesting because we've just touched the first layer. You've just done an inventory, and you really want to go dig deep into the lowest level. So in this case, because I showed you databases, let's stick to the Oracle instance that I have. And let me show you another tool that can actually discover objects inside that Oracle instance.
That would be very useful, actually. And would it also be able to give me a picture of how to convert it?
Yes, it will. So when I look at a database, I try and categorize it under four major categories. There are obviously the objects inside the database. Include schemas, tables, synonyms, sequences and views. It has some programmability elements like packages, procedures, functions, triggers, user-defined types, and so on and so forth. There is a security aspect to it. So who connects to that database? What are the rules? What are the users? And so on and so forth. And then finally, there is this entire automation aspect to the database. You might have jobs, schedules, and events. Now, when you talk about a database conversion step, some things are fairly straightforward. For example, if you look at tables, schemas, if there is a mapping between an Oracle data type and a SQL data type, schema conversions are not a big deal. There might be 10, 20% of those cases where the same data type does not exist. And you have to go manually do that mapping. The really difficult part is actually the custom code inside Oracle. PL SQL that's embedded either inside the application or is in the procedures. The tool that I'll show you actually does do a lot of discovery for you.
That's very neat.
It would also tell you what it can convert, what it cannot convert. So you can automate that process. With some manual intervention, you'd be able to take the first step.
Oh, would you be able to show me how it will work with one of the schemas that we've identified?
Sure.
So we picked up one application to start with for piloting and prototyping. And it has a dependency on on one of the schemas. If you can show me what it would cost to make the migration, then we can put together the whole report.
So let me show you this tool. It's called the SQL Server Migration Assistant for Oracle. Now, it's called SSMA. It's well known by SSMA. Now, SSMA has many different flavors. There's SSMA for Oracle. There's SSMA for MySQL, DB2, Sybase, Access, a bunch of technologies. But let me focus on the Oracle part of it for now. If you look at it, it is a project-based system. So the first step that you really do would be to create a project. So let me go to the menu, create a new project. I call it the migration project. Well, there's one thing that I forgot to show you. While I'm creating a project, I can actually choose my migration target. So you can actually specify that you want to go to 2016. So in this case, that's exactly where I want to go. So I'll choose 2016 as my target. Now the next step would be to connect to the Oracle instance.
Okay.
To start discovery. So let me connect to my Oracle instance.
That happens occasionally on our instances.
So if you notice now, it's actually trying to load the objects. It will analyze the metadata for those objects. And then it'll try and convert it to see if it's able to do that conversion or not. And then the next step would be producing a report for you. Now, the report will show you what is inside that Oracle database. It'll actually also give you an estimation of what would it take to convert those. So it's discovered my Oracle instance.
So of the objects that you talked about earlier, which are the objects that the SSMA would target?
So let me actually just show you through the reports.
That'd be great.
So in this case,
I'm looking at the HR schema, yes?
Yeah, it's a well-known schema, so I decided to make some modifications to it. I go create a report. Now, if you notice, it's actually analyzing the metadata right now. And it has generated a report for me. Why don't you take a look at the report and tell me what you understand by the report?
Absolutely. Oh, this is great. So you're telling me that of the statement types, you're able to convert 97.36%? That's fantastic.
For this specific example, yes.
And I also notice at the bottom of the screen where we are saying the total estimated manual conversion time is 0.4 hours.
Yeah, so this is a very interesting feature. So every time we find something that we're not able to convert, we try and allow one of our developers to actually do a manual conversion process. So over time, we've actually calculated what would be the average time to convert
this manual conversions.
An object like this. So we think for this one, it's a user-defined type that's in Oracle, and SSMA would not be able to convert it. We estimate that it'll take us 0.4 hours to do
man
something.
Hours to do it, okay.
Now, why this is important is for any migration project, when you're doing the database conversion, you can actually take that report and share it out with your DBAs and show them the lay of the land.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want to do, be able to do that, actually. At the higher level, I would like to be able to understand what is the effort required to migrate these databases.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, I think having this report and having the estimation of the manual conversion time, and not only that, on the left I see this list of objects that you're working through, would help me be able to track my progress through the migration.
Correct.
Which allows it to be more predictable, because I'd like to be able to be more transparent with respect to the migration. And having this report and being able to consolidate it would give me that predictability.
Perfect.
So I was able to share this report. I was able to put together a report of the objects that we needed to migrate. And we have a very good estimate of, a very accurate estimate of how long the migration is going to take.
Mm-hmm.
Now comes the next phase. How do I go about the execution of this migration? Do we have any good business practices that we suggest to follow?
So doing the design process is actually a very iterative process. You have to understand the lay of the land, which we already figured out. You have to design a blueprint. Think of it like an architectural drawing. You have to lay every component in the right place, attempt the migration step by step. The one thing that I always tell people to do is a migration project can get complex in no time. Stick to the scope. Decide what's the most minimal thing that you can actually go do without impacting your application. So as I call it out, design to land the migration. Once you get familiar with how you do it, then you can actually talk to stakeholders and see if you can add new scope to it and expand it.
I can definitely understand that one, actually. That's always, as we are talking to the application owners, there's always this urge to actually see if we can also expand during the migration, to optimize during the migration. So you are suggesting that we design to get what we want to be successful with the project, and then we expand.
Yep.
So now that I've worked through your design pattern, we picked up with a set of projects that we wanted to start with. And we are starting with a simple application. And I would like to understand how I could work to make the application migration smooth.
Well, as I explained before, right, migration is an iterative cycle, right? You migrate, you test, you remediate. In the previous example where I showed you certain things cannot be converted, right, there is some manual intervention involved. So we can convert 80% of it. Once it gets to SQL Server, you'll have to do some manual conversion. So let's take a quick look at the migration methodology. Now, here's how I split it. Database migration is a two-step process. You start off by migrating schemas. So when I say you migrate a schema, you create a similar structure inside SQL Server 2016. Once you're fairly confident that data types have been mapped, the structure is how you like it to be, then you go about data migration. Now, schema conversion, if you looked at it, SSMA was able to show you the same schema conversion. It can actually create that schema into 2016 for you.
Oh, that's very useful.
So how about this? Let me show you how to do that, and then we can get into data migration.
So are we going back to our HR schema?
Yep. And actually, let me open up SSMS just to show you if I have the HR database there or not. If you notice, I don't have any HR database in it yet. I have a different database called SSIS HR, which got nothing in it. But I want to make sure that I'm able to create that schema from the HR schema inside Oracle. To SQL Server.
SQL, okay.
So we did create the conversion report. Now, the next step would be actually to find out if there are any issues. So we clearly saw that there was a user-defined type.
We saw, yeah, there's this user-defined type that we have out there.
Correct. Connect to your SQL Server. In this case, I'm connecting to the local server instance. And I'm telling it that the database where I want the schema to be created is HR. All right? I connect to it. Now, if you notice the error, it's actually telling me that HR does not exist in the specified instance of the SQL Server. you want to create it.
Absolutely.
So let's go ahead and create it. You get this warning, a prerequisite warning that says, this is a common requirement. SQL Server Agent is not running. You must start SQL Server Agent to use server-side data migration engine. Now, the one thing that I didn't tell you was, inside of SSMA, it supports client-side migration and server-side migration. For server-side migration, you would actually need a SQL agent to run because it's going to create jobs that will do the migration for you. For the purpose of this demo, let's stick to client-side migration. Let me hit continue. So just like I had the Oracle Metadata Explorer, I also have the SQL Metadata Explorer.
So at this point, you've just, have you converted the?
No, it's only created.
You've just created the HR schema.
Yes. I right-click on HR in the Oracle Metadata Explorer, and I say convert schema.
OK. What happens at this point to the user-defined type?
It won't get converted, as I said. There's no action that'll happen to it.
OK. But the rest of the schema gets converted.
That is correct.
So I noticed that you mentioned the migrate, test, and remediate cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, we've migrated it. Do we test the schema?
Well, we haven't done any migration yet.
OK.
We've only converted the schema.
Oh, I see. OK, we've just converted the schema at this point.
So let me show you something interesting. Once you've converted the schema, you go to your SQL Server Metadata Explorer.
OK.
Right-click on it, and you say, synchronize with database.
And what happens at this point?
At this point in time, it's actually creating that schema for you inside SQL Server.
So it pushes out the change that you made into the SQL Server.
Same exact view is actually going to go inside SQL Server. Let me hit OK on that. And if you notice at the very bottom, it's actually trying to tell you which phase it is in. So it's loading to the database, new assembly, and then it'll start creating the schema for you.
While we are waiting for this one to happen, you mentioned client-side and server-side migration. Is there a pattern as to when we should use client-side and when we should use server-side migration?
So think about client-side migration as a double hop process. You're actually converting. Pushing the data from your local machine.
From the Oracle instance.
Correct. Oracle instance to your local machine, where you're running it from, and then pushing it from there to SQL Server.
OK. Well, what
on the other
the
hand side,
one?
The server-side migration, you're actually creating jobs inside the destination SQL Server.
Oh, I see.
And I can actually pull from Oracle. Yeah. Why don't you go ahead while this is happening? Correct. So
just to repeat the question is basically if there are issues that we've noticed in the report, when do we actually fix it? Do we fix it on the Oracle side or do we fix it on the SQL side?
So that's actually a very good question. It depends on the issue, actually. So let's say for something very simple, there's a number data type in Oracle that can hold anything. And you would actually like to move it to SQL Server. The default type mapping for that would be float with precision 53. Now, it's fairly understandable because there was no equivalent, we did float 53. But what if the number column had a primary index in it? Now, you have float 53 with a primary index on it. Think about the performance. Because it's a float value. So what will be interesting for you would be to analyze your Oracle instance first to see what was contained inside the column. So let's say a typical example would be region ID. Region ID would not have any float values. You could actually go to the tool, change type mapping to say, let's convert it into integer. And you could do it at the table level when you're actually doing creating the schema, or you could do it at the project level. So when you do it at the project level, a default conversion is applied for all number types to an integer or float. But at every table, if you see that there is an anomaly, you can actually go and do that inside the tool. For that specific error that you saw where the user-defined type cannot be converted, the best way for you to fix it would be to actually go into SQL Server and create
a similar type. That causes the least amount of disruption. You work with the fact that how much are you willing to take a disruption? So.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct. So some stored procedures we will be able to convert. For the ones that we'll not be able to convert, we'll actually create a structure for you. We'll create the stored procedure, we'll create a structure for you, and we'll comment out the sections where we don't think we'll be able to do a proper conversion. And at that point, when that procedure is available in SQL Server, you can then go rewrite it.
Does that answer your question? So now that the process is complete.
Actually, let's quickly take a look at our SQL Server instance. So the HR database was created. It actually created a bunch of tables in it.
I can see the tables, yes.
Now, let's find out if there's anything inside the tables yet. There's nothing.
So right now, these are empty tables.
So that's your next queue to go into data migration. But
so before in order for my application to work, it needs the data that needs to be populated from my Oracle instances as well.
Correct. But I still want to go back to that gentleman's question. So let's say we had the user-defined type here. That SSMA was not able to convert. When you click on that user-defined type with that error, it actually gives you the text in Oracle. So PL SQL. So create or replace type person underscore OT as object.
OK.
Now, there isn't an equivalent for that inside of SQL Server. So the way you would want to rewrite is, so once you go to SQL, you can actually rewrite it, and you can create a type as table. Now, the one thing that you have to keep in mind is you have to introduce a row ID and create a primary key on the row ID. So people who have worked in Oracle, I'm sure you're aware of the row ID concept inside of Oracle. There isn't an exact equivalent there. So what you really have to do is create your own row ID and use the new ID function that's available in 2016 to generate it for you.
And we are doing this in order that I don't have to make much changes in my application?
Well, yes, because you want to make sure that any procedure calls that uses that type, you want to make sure that that type is available.
Got it.
Uh, 2016 is not a requirement, really. If you have 2008 R2, 2012.
Do you want to just repeat the question?
Oh, yes, sure. So the question that a gentleman asked was, do you have to do any extra work if you don't have 2016 and you have older versions of SQL Server like 2008 R2, 2012? What do you really have to do? Now, across versions of SQL Server, some things exist and some things don't exist, which means the conversion rate would not be the same that you see right now. If you look at the SSMA tool actually allows you to do the conversions for various migration targets.
Various platforms, actually.
So if I actually do new project and I go to the dropdown, we give you support for 2008, 2012, 2014, 2016. So there might be a little bit more manual work that you have to do, But it is not a real requirement to use 2016 for all of this.
We would recommend it, of course, but. So going back, we just replaced our user-defined type with a table value.
Yeah, with a type table. So now that we've done the schema migration, the next step, the big step, would be migration of data, right? So as I showed you back in SSMS, there were no rows inside that.
There was no data in the table.
Correct. So if you look at this option here, there is this menu item called Migrate Data. If you right-click on the HR schema in the Oracle Metadata Explorer, you can do a Migrate Data from there as well. So at this moment, let me just migrate that data. Connecting to my Oracle instance. Connecting to my SQL instance. And now it's actually starting the data migration engine. So if you look at it, it identified these many tables, and it's actually migrated all the rows, and it's given you a success rate. It also tells you how much time it took to move those rows over. So if I go back to SSMS now, and I run that same query.
Excuse me.
It has values in it.
I see all the rows.
Sorry? Yes, yes. No. You have to install those drivers. That is correct. That is correct. It's one of the prerequisites. So let's switch gears. Go back to our presentation.
So, as I was mentioning, we wanted to be able to migrate this application that relies on the HR schema. You talked to me about migrating the data and the schema, or converting the schema and migrating the data over. Does that mean the application is just going to work?
Well, it depends on the application, right? So an application could be a two-tier application, where a front-end connects directly to the back-end. The front-end might have a lot of embedded PL/SQL queries in it. It might generate dynamic PL/SQL.
Unfortunately, we have situations where we have that.
Yeah, so those things, because SSMA does static analysis, it's very difficult for it to actually go discover all of that for you. Now, having said that, though, if you can run the native profiler facilities inside Oracle, like the SQL Trace facility, tkprof, you should be able to profile what queries are coming from the application.
You
can run the SSMA command line to convert dynamic PL/SQL to T/SQL.
But that would still require me to go and...
That would still require you to do some profiling. Now, for an end-tier application where a front-end is talking to a middleware, the middleware is talking to the back-end, and the middleware is responsible for abstracting the data layer for the front-end, you really don't have to make any changes in the front-end. All changes go into your middleware.
Okay.
There are other considerations like client connectivity. So if you're using the native interface OCI, there is no support for that in SQL Server. So you have to do some work there to migrate those applications.
So there's some amount of application rewrite that I have to take, that we would have to do as a part of this data migration as well. But it could be a good housekeeping exercise for us. Many of these applications have been running for quite some time, so it'll be a good exercise for us to actually go and tune these applications.
Well, as I look at the migration lifecycle, right, it is always nice to revisit what you want to go change, what do you want to go modernize when you get into a migration project. It's time for you to go and look back at your legacy applications. Do you really need them? Do you really need to keep them around? Can you deprecate them? Do you want to consolidate multiple different instances into one single instance of SQL Server because you're buying new hardware and so on and so forth? So it's the right time for you to get into conversations like those.
That's perfect. So as we get into the deployment cycle, unfortunately, I've hit a roadblock. I did the schema conversion as we were talking about, and I did the data migration. And we went ahead and modified the schema and migrated. We did the migrate, test, and remediate cycle multiple times. But what we discovered was when we were ready to deploy, we found out that the data had changed significantly from the time that we picked up the initial set of data. Mm-hmm. The only way that I can think about in order to be able to switch over the application is to actually take a downtime to migrate the remaining data over.
Correct.
Is there a way for me to actually avoid this downtime? Because from the application owner perspective, they would like to reduce the downtime. Well, I think I'll need to take a significant hit on the downtime.
Actually, there are many different ways to do it. When I showed you the SSMA tool, I forgot to mention here that SSMA is not the only tool that can allow you to migrate from Oracle to SQL. It does a fairly good job at converting the schema. It does a fairly good job at converting static procedures and so on and so forth. But sometimes for complex applications where the data volume is high, you really need a parallel throughput from a product. I would recommend using SSIS. And I'll tell you why I'm talking about SSIS with you right now when you ask me a question about how do you minimize downtime, right? We have this tool available from Microsoft. It's called the Change Data Capture. Now, Change Data Capture for Oracle does a brilliant job. What it really does is it actually monitors your Oracle instance for any changes that are happening on the tables that you want to monitor. Once it tracks the changes, it actually pushes those changes into an intermediate table inside SQL Server. CDC provides you two functions that you could use, one to get all changes, and the one that can actually help you find out what the net changes are. So in some time, I'll show you how the CDC works. But before I get there, I really want to show you a quick example of SSIS.
OK. So SSIS is something that I used to when I have a scale of data that's huge?
Yeah, it works really well when you have to move data at scale. Because you can create multiple different data flows, control flows inside of SSIS that can actually allow you to move that data over.
So I would actually use SSMA to migrate a subset of data, validate the application. While when I need to actually move the entire data over, I could use SSIS to do the migration?
You could. So let's take this for example, right? Now, we have this tool from Microsoft called the SQL Server Data Tools. It's called SSDT. Now, SQL Server Data Tools is good for developers who want to actually create a database project, make changes to it, and deploy it on multiple different environments. You can invoke SSIS from a bunch of places. I like this because I like to code sometimes, and then I find it very easy to use the SSIS package. SSIS package for doing this migration. So let me actually show you how you would do that. If you go to File New, again, this is also a project-based system. You can create a new project. And you can choose an integration services project. Now, for the purpose of this, I actually created an integration project already. So I started off by creating a control flow, which is a data flow task. You can actually pull tasks from the left pane. It has a bunch of tasks that you could do. Because SSIS is very flexible, you can actually do transformations inside SSIS too. So let's say you want to convert from type A to type B. You can do all those transformations through ETL transformation tasks inside of SSIS.
Well, that's very flexible.
So I've made this fairly simple. So I create a data flow task. Once I create a data flow task, I actually choose an ADO.NET source and an ADO.NET destination. So if I look at the ADO.NET source, I'm saying connect to my Oracle instance. I created an Oracle connection manager. You can actually selectively tell it what to pull out as well. So in this case, I'm actually picking up the HR schema employees table. And I said, give me everything from that table. And then for my SQL Server, I just said, put that into a database called SSIS HR. Remember in SSMS, you were seeing an SSIS HR database? So I said, let's just start pushing that data into SSIS HR. And you can create a table to which it should actually go to. I use new. And here, I can actually write the table name. So let's actually get into dbo.hr.employees. Hit OK. Go to my control flow. And just start that task. Think
so
about this.
It starts pulling from.
Correct. So you can actually create multiple different data flow tasks. And you can inject in parallel inside SQL Server, as long as SQL Server can handle that transaction load. So let me hit start. It says it's ready. If you notice the status here, it says the package execution completed with success. Now, what does that mean? Let's go to SSMS. Let's go to my SSIS HR database. There's my table. Now let me query that. There you go.
Data from Monday.
Yeah, so there are multiple different ways of doing the same thing. Now, since you talked about the deployment phase and you said you wanted to minimize the downtime, I said, why don't you use CDC? So let me show you a brief demo of how CDC works.
So when you talked about CDC, you mentioned that it starts tracking my tracking the table that I monitor mm-hmm. for the incremental updates.
Correct.
And once it sees the incremental updates, it pushes it into an intermediate table in MySQL.
Correct.
And from that, I can actually start monitoring the activity that's happened, and I can push, keep my SQL table in sync with my Oracle instance
Correct.
Through the migration process.
Well, just like I showed you simple tasks inside SSIS, there are actually CDC tasks inside SSIS too.
Oh,
So think of this. You could create an initial load task inside SSIS that does nothing but creates a schema and pushes the data over. And beyond that, you can create an incremental task, a load task, that invokes CDC, tracks changes, and then applies it to the destination server. So the Oracle CDC component, there are actually two components that are available in the Oracle CDC component. One, it's called a CDC service configuration. And then there is a CDC designer. So using the CDC service configuration, we're going to prepare SQL Server. What does it really mean by preparing SQL Server? Now, CDC depends on the creation of a bunch of different databases inside SQL Server that will allow you to perform CDC. So it has system views, system tables, a bunch of schema that it has to create for CDC to work. So I'll switch back to the demo really quickly. I'll show you what it does. So I start off by preparing my SQL Server. I connect to my local instance.
So this will be on my destination side.
This is on your destination side. Well, this is going to fail right now because I inserted two dots in it. So let's wait for it to error out.
While we are waiting for it, would you be able to explain what you are talking about, the workflow?
Yeah, sure. So remember I was telling you, you can design your workflow in a way where you do an initial load, which means you prepare your database, you move the schema over, you read everything from the source, you write to the destination, and then you record a position. When I say record a position essentially means record the position where the last record was entered.
That way we don't lose any data.
Correct. And once that happens, you can do an incremental load. And incremental load means nothing but the position that you recorded in SQL Server, you can get the last position that was recorded. You can read the changes from Oracle.
The intermediate table?
From the Oracle table. You can then process those changes, persist it into the intermediate table, and then you can save the current position.
Got it.
And then you can load that entire thing into the destination server to make sure that you're able to sync from Oracle to SQL Server. And when the sync is complete, it's then time for you to take a minimal downtime and then switch your application over. So let me quickly go back to the demo. Let me cancel this out really quickly. While this happens, does anyone have questions? Please. Yes.
Can you repeat the question?
She's saying, do you convert schemas into separate databases? In this case, yes. I converted the HR schema into an HR database inside SQL Server. Where? Inside SSMA? Inside? So
the question is, have we run into any limits with respect to the size of the schema or the size of the data when we are running within SSMA?
So I'll help you answer that question. SSMA 6.0 had a few issues where once you start loading huge schemas, it'll take time for it to process those schemas. And there wasn't a limit defined to it at that time. We actually made a lot of optimizations in 7.0, where the last time I think we worked for a customer, the customer had about 100,000 objects inside his Oracle schema, and we were able to convert that in
25 to 30 minutes. So we did have some issues with the performance that we are working through, and we are still working through the performance, but I don't see a technical limitation to it. It takes time because of the conversion is a single process at a time.
So let me actually run
this one
the
more
CDC.
Question, do you?
Oh, there's one more question? Sure.
Yes.
All the That is correct.
So when you start, so that's a matching. Do you really need, or because there's some feedback in all of that, this system hasn't been able to keep them automatically. So if you have something like that, you just pick all the objects, all of them that you really don't need to, just and then give advice or suggestions on how to use that.
Do you want to repeat that question?
I was hoping that you will be able to summarize it better, actually.
I can repeat that question. So his question is, do you really need Oracle expertise during this entire conversion step to move from Oracle to SQL Server? And how will the tool help? As I said before, the tools, there are guarantees in the tool that will tell you we will be able to do 80% of the less complex stuff from Oracle, convert from Oracle to SQL. For the 20% that's really complex, you really need to know the Oracle structure. And it's very hard to automate all of that into the tool. Now, we do have support at Microsoft. We have consultants at Microsoft that can actually help with that conversion. So if you were a customer and you were to call us, it always does not mean that you need to possess that expertise. As long as we are able to discover what cannot be converted, you'll get enough help from Microsoft consulting or support to be able to help you with the conversion.
So to add,
sure. Actually, let me go back to the demo in the out of the time we have. So I was showing you guys the CDC. So let me prepare the SQL Server instance really quickly. When I run it, I prepared it before, so it said that the preparation was successful. After I prepare the SQL Server in CDC, I create a new service. Now, this new service is nothing but a Windows service. The Windows service will actually talk to Oracle and start tracking changes. Now,
and the service can run on any machine?
The service can run on any machine. And this step is really important. It says create a CDC service master password. Now, it's not obvious in the UI, but it actually does follow the standard password policies
for
Windows. So make sure that you use a complex password, otherwise, when you use the designer, it'll complain that the CDC service has not been initialized. So let's give this a little bit more, moment for it to create that service, and then I can show you how CDC works.
And a single service, can a single service monitor multiple tables on Oracle side, Shamik?
Yes, it can.
So once you instantiate the service, this service is the one that's monitoring the Oracle instance as well
Correct.
As the SQL instance.
So this is just a service. Once the service is created, in this case it is created now, let me actually open up the designer. This is the CDC designer. Now I connect to my local instance, SQL Server instance again. It's already discovered that I created a service called the Oracle CDC service. At this point in time, you actually create a new Oracle CDC instance. And this is exactly where you would provide the Oracle connection details.
And you can instantiate multiple CDC instances within that service. So as a part of the migration, I can actually monitor all my DBs with this single service?
Yes, you can. Just creating a CDC change database inside SQL Server. So we can actually go to SSMS and find out if that is done. Let me refresh the screen really quickly. Well, this is happening. Are there more questions?
Yes.
It, It's running exactly where you're running it from right now. So okay. I'm running it on my local machine. So wherever you instantiate the service from is where it runs. So let me give it the Oracle connection string. Machine name is called Aorta. I'm connecting using system. Let me test the connection really quickly. The connection is successful. I hit next. Now I can add an Oracle table here. So let's say we were interested in the HR schema. You can search for a table pattern. In this case, employees. I choose HR employees. I add it. I hit next. Now, the very important thing in CDC that you have to remember is CDC would not work unless your Oracle is in the archive log mode. So you have to make sure that that's a prerequisite. Your Oracle has to be set up for archive log mode for this to work. So let me run the script really quickly. Now, the script that is running is actually generating supplemental logging. Again, an Oracle concept. You have a script that you could use from the UI directly to run on Oracle, but the UI allows you to do all of that natively. So let me run it.
Validates it.
Looks like it's still running. Let's give it a few more minutes. Well, that happens. Any questions?
Is the question, can you monitor the entire instance, the Oracle instance at once?
You have to create multiple of those. So this is done.
The tables can be monitored in a pattern. But the schemas have to be added individually.
Let me finish this really quickly. Now let's make sure that my instance is actually instantiated and it's running. So here's my CDC change instance. Let me start it. And before I start making any changes to Oracle, let's make sure that the service is running.
So at this point, what you're looking at is basically the it's a CDC monitor, so basically you're looking at whether you are tracking any changes.
Correct. So in this case, I'm just making sure that CDC is running. So right now it's running. At this moment, it'll start tracking those changes. So if you look at it, it's looking at the transaction log header change number. It's looking at the tail change number. It's giving you the current change number as well. So let me introduce something inside into Oracle really quickly. So let me open up the SQL developer. I think I had an instance here already. Let me insert something into the HR employees table. Connecting to HR. Let me run a query really quickly on HR. So let's say I enter a new entry, Sri Raman. You have a complicated name, Sri Raman.
You can definitely verify it was added or not.
So let me run it really quickly. Let me change that because it complained of a unique constraint.
One row inserted.
Let me commit it really quickly. And let me go to CDC here. So if you notice, it read a few changes, it's written a few changes, it's done some completed transactions. How do you really determine what changed and where can you really track it, right? So remember I told you that there are some native functions that CDC provides. Now, one of that is this.
Intermediate table as well.
Sorry?
You're mentioning an intermediate
table as well. Yeah. So one of those functions is the CDC get all changes. Let me take that really quickly. Run it in SQL Server. CDC change was the database that was used. Let me run this query. There you go. It said, I did insert Sriraman, Narasimhan. So as a deployment step, you can actually start tracking changes, and then you can keep your destination database in sync.
In sync, OK. So I need to create a separate job that will monitor this intermediate table and keep pushing that, or excuse me,
that's
do
correct.
It as a cycle.
That is correct. I'm skipping through this because I already explained to you what it is doing. You should be in archive log mode inside Oracle. For this to work, you have to install your CDC service. The CDC service will monitor Oracle, and then we will create mirror tables inside of SQL Server and push the changes there. As always, I think we're getting very close to the end of our session. You can always create SSMA tool support requests through the Microsoft site. We have Premier Support, Assisted Support, and Forums. The one thing that I didn't tell you was SSMA would also actually help you move to Azure Database, SQL Azure Database. So we have that capability inside SSMA 7.0 today. SSMA 7.0 also has additional support for features that exist in Oracle, like VPD. VPD is the virtual private database. The equivalent in SQL Server is RLS, row-level security. So it does an automated made it conversion. You can do in-memory table mappings directly. It has support for that. It has support for temporal. It has support for in-memory OLTP, spatial, and so on and so forth. So why don't you do a quick recap, Sriraman, and then we can open it up for questions.
Just to recap, we went through the migration methodology that we would adapt. The process allows us to actually take a complex migration, break it into phases, bring predictability to the system. So we start out with a defined phase where we actually identify the scope of the migration that we are doing, identify what success looks like, identify the acceptance criteria, work with the stakeholders, make sure that the people that need to be consulted are consulted, informed are informed, as well as the responsible people understand the scope and how to work through it iteratively. The next phase of doing that is assessment, understanding unearthing the unknown, understanding the footprint of the migration effort, and understanding the infrastructure and application dependencies as well. At this point, we'd also like to call out the legacy applications as well as the ISV dependencies, just to make sure that we are building that into the scope and not allowing it to creep later. The design phase is about creating a blueprint for our execution. What we would recommend as a best business practice is do decomposition opportunistically. Don't try to decompose the entire project at one go. Try to break it into smaller pieces. Work through the smaller migration first before you pick up the bigger ones. Set the team up for success. Engage the applications and the application owners. Engage the application users. Make sure that we are able to drive through with the minimum disruption. Then we get into the migrate, test, and remediate cycle. This is an iterative cycle. Again, basically do the first level of migration, test the application, test the schema, test the data, make changes that you need to make, and go through the process till we get a complete confidence about the system. At this point, as Shamik was pointing out to having the, for critical DBs and critical applications, having the CDC enabled, making sure that you're monitoring the table for the changes will actually mean that when you're ready to deploy, there's minimal disruption on the application. Once we are comfortable that we've got the entire migration schema and the data ready, it's time to switch over and do the deploy and validate with the end user as well as the application owners.
There's a very important part of a deploy. Optimize your database. So once it gets into SQL Server, you can monitor the behavior of the queries. Remember I told you about TKProf and a SQL Trace facility in Oracle.
Yep.
You should be able to look at statistics from there. Run statistics on your SQL Server to find out why queries behave bad and do performance sync on top of it. So never forget to optimize after you deploy your changes.
After you deploy.
So as I explained before, the tools that are available are SSMA for Oracle, SSMA for MySQL, Sybase, and DB2. We also do Microsoft Database Technology migrations to SQL Server. So there is a Database Migration Assistant that was recently announced. It replaces SQL Server Upgrade Advisor. It allows you to migrate from lower versions of SQL Server to 2016. Today, in its current stage, it provides you assessments, but going forward, we'll be introducing the migration capabilities. It will allow you to, not only to move data in schema, but also logins and jobs. And then finally, we have SSMA for Access. For legacy applications that are still using Access, you will be able to use SSMA to move from Access to SQL Server.
Or SQL DB.
Not yet. It's in the pipeline. So before you take time to evaluate the session, there are useful links inside the appendix that have tuning guides on how SSI should operate, what can you do to load 1 terabyte in 30 minutes with SSIS, and so on and so forth. And the whole incremental logging, loading, and initial loading concepts is available through Matt Mason's blog. With this, we conclude the session. Feel free to ask questions if you have any.
Yes.
Correct. Correct.
But at perspective level, like, do you guys have any guidance where some customers should be?
Yeah. So we definitely have white papers that talk about that. What would be nice is after the session, we can take your contact and we'll send you all that information. So it's already documented. There are a bunch of white papers that talk about feature level comparisons between Oracle and SQL, and what you should think about.
Yes? Packages are covered as a part of the migration. So if
Correct.
You look back at the programmability aspect of it, SSMA does provide support to implicitly convert. Though again, as Shamik was pointing out, depending on what level of detail that goes into, sometimes a manual conversion would be required at the packages level. But that's where the complexity becomes higher when you look at, compared to data and schema, when you look at packages or functions or user-defined types. We do try to actually, the tool does try to convert it, but we always advise that take a look at it, and sometimes you might need to do manual tuning.
And it's based on scenarios. For customers that have been using SSMA, we find some customers where SSMA is able to convert it fully. For some customers, the packages are overly complex, where manual intervention is required. But yes, to a question, packages conversion does happen inside SSMA. That is correct.
Correct.
It is going to be a manual process.
Yeah.
So I think the question was whether CDC will capture
changes
to stored procedures or not. The answer would be it does it for tables, any transactional data that you change.
Yes.
Hello.
It's a very good feature ask. We don't do that today, but definitely in our roadmap to do build some sizing recommendations as well.
We are working through a modeling called experimentation. So where we actually, today we are building it, looking at the SQL to an upgrade scenario, how do you experiment? The same way we want to be able to enable in a scenario where you're looking at the Oracle, be able to experiment with different configuration, find out what is the right configuration for you. Because it could change in the workload, it could change in the time that you're using the workload, et cetera.
As a quick repeat of the question, his question was, inside the tool, do we actually analyze the workload in Oracle and provide any sizing recommendations in SQL? So we don't do that today. We will do that in the near future. So as I said before, we do have support for Azure SQL Database today. Now, there's limited capabilities to what it could do, and we have it documented in our blogs today. For Data Warehouse, we have not done it yet, but that is also on the plan to include Data Warehouse migration as well.
Yes,
please. So the question is, are the tools invoked from Management Studio or are they separate? They're separate today.
And some of them are kind of developer tools, some of them are management tools, yes. So they have that separation as well.
I mean, to this point, though, it will be nice to have a unified tool.
A single experience, I agree.
Yeah, but
I totally agree. Yeah.
But today there are disparate tool sets. Any more questions? Well, thank you, everyone.
Thank you, folks.